Walter Langford on May 6, 1982 in Glenn Wright's home in Fresno, California. Give it a minute to go through what it went through. Now, Glenn, tell me about your first years in Missouri.
Well, I was born in Archie, Missouri.
What was your family like? How many?
Well, my father and mother and brother and sister. My brother was 7 years older and my sister was 4 years older, so I was the baby of the family, and all of them took care of me.
Where is Archie?
Archie's a little town of about 500 south of Kansas City, about 50 miles.
Oh, yeah.
And my father had a lumber yard and hardware there, and we all worked there. I did after I got old enough.
Yeah. I suppose like
they were all fine people. They're all gone now, and I'm the black sheep of the family and still alive for some reason.
I'm not sure
just why.
I suppose like nearly all towns in those years, Archie had a town baseball team.
Yes, we did, and my brother wasn't athletic. He was a big man, over 6 feet and weighed over 200 pounds. And he kind of sponsored it, you know, because he could get the equipment, having a hardware store. And,
sure.
And they were, our team was made up of farmers and what few there were in town that could play. I was the youngest on the team. And I could throw hard, and no telling where. That's the reason they called me Buckshot later in Kansas City. But we had a pretty good team, and we played on 4th of July like we'd play maybe two games.
Yeah.
I'd pitch the first game and play short the second game. And we played Kansas City teams, some fella noticed me and recommended me to Kansas City.
Good.
That's when George Muehlbach owned the Kansas City Blues. But then we only had a 3-year high school in Archie. So I finished high school in Harrisonville, Missouri, which was toward Kansas City, but about 12 miles north of Archie.
Yeah.
And from there, I went to the University of Missouri.
In Columbia.
In Columbia. And I only went the 1 year because I had this offer from Kansas City. And
sure.
At a salary away larger than most the kids were offered.
What year was that?
Oh, 1920, I guess it was.
Oh, yeah. And they offered you how much?
$250 a month.
Sounds big.
Well, most of the youngsters were offered maybe up to $100 or $125.
What did your father think about you going off to play ball?
He left it up to me. My mother didn't want me to go.
Yeah, that's usual.
As I maybe told you before, I'd never seen a professional game. And at Columbia, I only played fraternity baseball. I played basketball, which was a game I thought I could play. And I played football. And went out for track, too. Bob Simpson, maybe you've heard of him, was a track coach. He was a great hurdler, you remember.
You were an all-around athlete at that time.
Well, I could do something of most everything. And I liked to do it, too.
That's the main thing.
I wasn't being in athletics, and I belonged to the Delta Tau Delta fraternity, and being a freshman, we had to bring dates out out at the house for Sunday dinners, you know. At that time, oh, I know a couple of girls from Stevens College, girls' school, and Christian College, which is also a girls' school, but we had to bring chaperones, even on Sunday afternoon dinner dates, you know.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Tea, you might call it. But I was kind of fortunate. The minute I got in the house, somebody older classmen would have my have the chaperone, and and some of the other older classmen had my date. So,
right.
It was enjoyable, though. I enjoyed it. And I know in football, I was a halfback, and just before the regular season opened for the Tigers, the varsity, they played the freshmen in a, what they called an All-American game. And I happened to catch a pass that was meant for somebody else and ran about 60 yards for a touchdown. And I couldn't help it, really. Everybody was taken out for me, but
George, all you had to do was run.
George Sisler was at the game, and he happens to be a Delta. He was over at our house after the game.
Well, now he was already in the major leagues.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
For some time, and he was from Michigan, I believe. And he congratulated me, and which I thought was
nice,
great.
Did he know you played baseball?
Well, I think so, because later he chose me on his all-time team, which I thought was
that's something
great. Yes,
sure thing.
And Al Lopez did too, but a lot of my friends have been pulling for me, you know, for the Hall of Fame.
I read somebody just recently, but I don't remember where. I read an awful lot of baseball publications, who said Glenn Wright was the best shortstop you ever saw.
Well,
I wish I could remember who it was that said that.
Art Stoneham used to say that. He was always pulling for me, and he had the best shortstop I ever saw play for him.
Travis?
Travis Jackson.
Yeah.
Who went in the Hall of Fame.
Just recently.
And
yeah, I've got a letter out to Travis to see if I can pick him up when I go through Arkansas.
Well, good. Is that where he lives?
Yeah, Waldo, Arkansas.
Old Travis. Well, you know, when we played together, I usually got the nod over him. And, I thought, really, I might make the Hall of Fame before he did. But he played longer.
Well, that's one thing.
Yeah,
and
Joe
Sewell.
My feeling
is that, Joe Sewell's another. And my notion is that the old-timers committee or special committee ought to take into account where they've got several that are about equal. The ones that are so well along in years that they may not last too many more, and they ought to have the pleasure of seeing themselves go in while they're living.
Well, I agree with you there. Of course, I'd like to get in, of course. But
you're darn right.
Mainly for my friends, and my grandkids might be impressed.
Right.
That's
your own satisfaction, too.
Yes.
And another one is Charlie Grimm.
Yeah.
Old Charlie is now 83. I'm going to see him again next month. But
down in Phoenix?
Yeah, and outside Scottsdale suburb, but his wife writes that he's in very poor health right now.
Oh, is that? I'm sorry to hear
that. He's been having, off and on, bleeding ulcers, but now there's a little bit of heart trouble, too.
Well, you know, Charlie was with Pittsburgh my first year there, and we traded him to the Cubs.
Yep.
But Charlie was a great first baseman and the funniest guy I ever knew.
Must have been. Everybody says so.
More so he and Moranville, you know, or
Altrock
and Shaq. Well, Charlie was more like Altrock, and Moranville was more like Shaq. You know, they're mechanical.
Yes.
Funny, I guess you'd call it that.
Now, let me ask you this. In your days before you went to Kansas City even, who were your first heroes in Major League Baseball? Do you recall having special fondness for anybody?
No, I really can't. I don't remember reading the box scores or anything.
Yeah. No, in a little town like that, you probably wouldn't see the box scores too often.
No. No, we of course, took a Cascada Democrat, and I don't believe we had a paper in Archie.
All right, now you got to Kansas City in 1920.
21, I guess, yeah.
How long were you there, and where else did you go in the minors before you got to Pittsburgh in
24 was 24,
yeah.
Well, Kansas City, as I say, signed me out of the university and went spring training with them, and then they sent me to Houston first. I believe Ray Blades was managing Houston at the time, who I later knew with the Cards.
Sure.
But I had to have a lot of dental work done down there, and I'm not sure I even put on a uniform.
I'll be darned.
And so later, Kansas City sent me to Independence, Kansas. Mm-hmm. I was in the Southwestern League.
Yeah.
And I stayed there most of that year. We won the first half and also the second half.
Mm.
But Kansas City recalled me before our season was over, I guess.
Yeah, that's right.
And Kansas City still had games to play.
Uh-huh.
So they recalled me and excuse me.
It's all right.
And I finished the season with them.
Uh-huh.
They played me right away, and and wished they'd had me all year, they said, because I apparently looked all right, you know,
I'm
to
sure
them.
You did.
I was still a big, just a country kid, you know, and everybody played jokes on me and on my own team, but the opposition tried to play any jokes. Well, my own teammates took care of them.
I'm sure.
But then, in 23, we won the pennant in Kansas City and played Baltimore in a little World Series.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, it was a 9-game series.
Mm-hmm.
And we beat them finally in 9 games. We beat Lefty Grove the last game in Kansas City.
They had quite a team in those years.
Yes, they did.
Yeah. I mean, most
well,
of them,
that whole team practically went to Connie Mack.
Went up to the A's.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, the first ball, Lefty Grove threw it behind me. Mike scared me to death, you know, he being a left-hander,
and
me right.
Being as fast as he was, yeah.
And later, I was sitting in the lobby of a hotel up in Oakland during the World Series. And I asked him if he remembered. Well, he says, yes, I threw behind you, but he said I didn't mean to.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, if I'd known that, I'd have been more scared than ever. In those days, hitters were knocked down a lot, you know.
Oh, my, and you didn't have any batting helmet or anything.
No.
Yeah. Great. All right, now let's...
But Pittsburgh had the option on me.
How come? Because was Kansas City a farm team of Pittsburgh?
No. No, I'm not even sure they had farm teams then.
No, I guess that's before Branch Rickey started them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, but anyway, they'd made some deal with Kansas City to, mm-hmm. for an option, you know.
Yeah.
And they eventually, I think, they gave Kansas City $40,000 and 2 players for me.
That's pretty big in those days.
Yes, it was. And, anyway, I wouldn't sign with Pittsburgh unless they gave me some of the purchase price.
Fair enough.
Unless I got it.
Yeah.
Well, Pittsburgh said Kansas City got the money for you. They should be giving it to you. And I said, well, I don't care where I get it, as long as I get it. And Barney Dreyfus was their boss, and Bill McKechnie was the manager.
Mm-hmm.
So finally on the phone, Barney Dreyfus said he'd give it to me in cash when we came back through to play Kansas City in 2 or 3 exhibition games.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all there was, a phone conversation. I said, all right, and I have to train for Paso Robles, California, where we trained. And sure enough, when we got back to Kansas City, Bunny Dreyfus gave me an envelope with the $7,500 cash in it.
Wonderful.
And it'd be rather odd thing, I left that envelope up in my locker overnight. I forgot all about it. But it was still there the next day. And
thank God.
Yes. But anyway, I went to, when I got out to the Pittsburgh camp, well, Bill McKechnie says, you're my shortstop. He says, I don't care whether you ever pick up one or ever hit one.
That's quite,
of course, that gave me a lot,
quite a lot of confidence.
A lot of confidence, yeah.
Yeah.
And Rabbit Moranville had been
I was just going to look up. He moved over to second base.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
And he had a good year, too.
He had some good ones.
Yes, a funny thing. Well, it just happened to be on my mind. I got a double play ball hit deep in the hole, and I threw it to him, and he threw it right back at me. He said, don't throw it so blooming hard. And if I had the presence of mind, I still could have got the man
first.
But by the time I threw it, he was just there.
You would never think that it was going to come back to you, so...
Imagine something like that in a regular ball game.
It would take a guy like Rabbit to do that, right?
Yes, it would.
Now, you went through spring training out here in Paso Robles, then you went on through Kansas City and got your money, and what were your feelings in your first game in the majors?
Well, I remember it. We played Cincinnati.
Uh-huh. Where, in Pittsburgh?
In Cincinnati.
Oh, in Cincinnati.
And Wilbur Cooper was a pitcher, left-hander. And it seemed like I booted one. Oh, and he gave me the deuce, too, and I took it.
Yeah.
And then later, it seemed like I happened to hit one that drove in the winning run. We finally won the game.
Right.
I was always fortunate. I've made a lot of errors, probably more than any other shortstop. But
I doubt that.
Even in Kansas City, when I pull a boo-boo, well, eventually we'd win the game and they'd forget about it.
Yeah.
But anyway, some of my teammates told me to, next time he gets on you, Cooper I'm talking about,
yeah,
well, you get right back on him.
Mm-hmm.
Make any difference how you do it. Just let him know you're one of the players.
Yes.
So I did. And then after that, Wilbur won the room with me.
I'll be done.
He was a good pitcher, great control.
Oh,
you know.
Yes. One of the best left-handers in the National League for a long time.
Yes, he was. I believe Cooper died, didn't he?
You know, I've got a book out in my car that would tell me that, and I'm sure he would. He did, or I would have him on my list.
Yeah. He lived down around L.A. someplace,
yeah.
I think. But I believe I read that he had died.
Yeah, he won 20 games that year. He was 20-14 in 24.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I had a good year that
you
first year.
You sure did. 287 with...
I drove in over 100
runs. 111 runs driven in, and boy, they're not too
111,
many.
111,
was it? Yeah. Not too many first-year men can match that.
No. And not many shortstops have done it,
that's
I guess.
That's right. Exactly. You led the team by far that year in runs batted in.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Trainer had 82.
Well.
Rabbit 71, Charlie Grimm 63. Well, Kai Kyler had 85. But you were the big runs knocked in man.
Well, I know Bill McKechnie used to tell people that if I was at the plate and didn't mean anything, he'd just soon have the bat boy up there. But he said that a run's in scoring position, I'd rather have
you're
him than anyone. But I've always been fortunate that way,
yeah,
driving
yeah.
in runs.
That's more than fortunate. I think it's the, some people have got that capacity to lift themselves to the challenge when it means something.
Well, I don't know what the explanation is, but yeah. I love to drive in and around.
Yeah, who doesn't?
Yeah.
Now tell me about, for a second, about Bill McKechnie as a manager, and then we'll go to the other ones you played under.
Well, I think he's the best manager I ever played for. I haven't played for too many.
No, but you played for...
But Bill, I think he got the most runs out of a team, and he kept the other club from getting as many runs, too. And I know he always... Well, he always gave me lots of confidence. He was a kindly man. I didn't hear him swear hardly, and like a pop fly going out toward left field, you know, back to third base. He'd always say, "That was my ball, and you take it." Yeah. And you know, Trainer, he wanted everything. I've actually had to shove him away from ball. I said, "I'll get fined if I don't catch it."
Yeah.
And luckily, I don't ever remember dropping one.
That's wonderful.
But I think, overall, McKechnie was the best manager I played for. Wilbert Robinson was the most lovable.
Yes, he was kind in his last years as a manager when he got to Brooklyn.
When I was traded over there, he made me captain. Of course, I got a little raise.
Yeah.
And then the captain got an extra $500 for taking the lineup up to the umpires, you know. And not that it, and the umpires would listen to him a little bit more.
Yeah.
I know my voice didn't carry too well. I knew all the words and got on plenty of umpires. All of them were my friends. They got to know that if I kicked, I had a right
to
kick.
Well, McKechnie had to be a pretty good manager to win pennants with three different teams.
Yeah,
three different
St. Louis and Cincinnati.
Yeah. Now, you played also briefly, I think, under Max Carey.
Well, a little bit in Brooklyn.
I wouldn't imagine that Max would have been a very great manager.
Well, he wasn't really.
Yeah.
But I still played under Donnie Bush at Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I was going to say Donnie Bush, who also proved himself.
Yes.
As a good manager, he won a few pennants.
He was a good manager and a great fella, too.
Yeah.
We had our fights. He was a shortstop, and I was, too. And although we were good friends, we had our arguments. And
no problems.
But,
he won in both Pittsburgh and Milwaukee, I think.
I don't remember him winning in Milwaukee, but he couldn't.
No, I'm sorry. That was Fred Haney.
Yeah. And Donnie, you know, he's with Detroit. As a shortstop. He used to have his arguments with Cobb, he said.
Oh, I guess. Who didn't?
Yeah. Some of the players didn't even speak to Cobb.
I've read that Sam Crawford didn't speak to Cobb or back and forth for 2 or 3 years.
Sam Crawford, that was the first model bat I ever used.
Is it?
And later I changed to a George Sisler with a little bigger handle.
Uh-huh.
But I used a 42-ounce bat then, and it was fairly light, although a lot of fellows used lighter bats then, but I very seldom broke a bat.
Mm-hmm.
I know at that time, I believe Babe Ruth was using a 52-ounce bat.
Wow. Yeah.
And Hank Severoy, an old catcher, used a 56-ounce bat.
Good grief.
And like Ted Williams always said, your forearms have got to be strong to be a good hitter. And I kind of believe him. But you had to be stronger to swing that kind
of
bat.
One of those around on a fastball. Yeah.
I know in the World Series in 25, we knocked out whoever started for Washington that day, and Purple Marbury came in.
Yeah.
And he struck me out so fast, it seemed like 5 miles back to the bench after that. I swung at all of them. They were all high and tight, which is the ball I had to learn to lay off of.
That's in the World Series?
Yeah, 25.
Yeah. Marbury came in the third game, replacing Ferguson. And then he came in again in the fifth game, replacing Zachary.
Well, that's the game, because Zachary's a left-hander.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a great series.
Yes, it was. They had us down 3 games to one.
You were the first team, I believe, to ever come back from being down 3-1 and win.
Well, that could be.
Yeah. You know, I was a youngster then. I was born in 08. And my father and I went, our family went on a little vacation from down on the Mexican border in McAllen, Texas, to Corpus Christi, right at the time of the World Series. And there was a theater that had a big, what they called, kind of a, they made out like it's a baseball field, and they had lights to depict who was going where. You paid to get in, and we watched, and they got it by telegraph. And we were there every day, and we were for the Pirates. I had connections in Pittsburgh, and we sweated them out, especially in that final game when they jumped off 4-0 in the first inning. And it was interesting. My father had been a railway telegrapher. And when the game got down toward the end, he was listening all along, I guess, but when there wasn't too much noise, he could hear the dot, dot, dash, and so forth. Toward the end, when you were rallying before you and finally won it, he would listen a while, and he'd say, "I think this batter is going to hit a two-base hit. Next pitch should be a double." So he was hearing and reading the telegraph.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And we had more fun, but that was a really great rally.
Uh-huh.
Now, another... What about... What about Kai Kai as a player and a person?
Well, he was a great player.
Yes, no doubt.
And he was a great person, but he was had his peculiarities. Tyler didn't drink or smoke, but he thought he was pretty, and he was good-looking, but he'd spend a lot of time before the mirror kind of combing his hair just right and fixing himself up, which was all right, I guess.
Yeah, he produced anyway.
Oh, he produced. I always liked to watch Tyler hit a three-base hit. He was the prettiest runner I ever saw.
Well, I saw you guys. I didn't see any games in 25. I listened to that World Series. But I went as a freshman to Notre Dame in 1926. And before school started in September, I went over and spent a month in Pittsburgh, where I had relatives living on... I want to say Forward Avenue. Anyway, it was very close to Forbes Field. I could walk to Forbes Field.
Yeah.
And you were home most of the month in 26. And when I got there, you were in first place. But along about Labor Day, the Cardinals caught up with you and passed you. And but I saw more games in that month than I ever have in any other month in my life.
Is that right?
And it was just great all the time. Yeah. And there's so many of those old ballparks that are gone now that it's too bad in the sense that the spectators were more a part of the action in a sense. They were closer to it.
Yes, that's right.
Those old, smaller baseball parks. Than
they had me back there when they started tearing it down.
I'll be darned.
And even had a camera out there taking a picture of me at shortstop in among the rocks and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
I always loved that park, although they had a very hard infield.
Yeah.
I used to kind of work on it myself, you know, but...
Not as hard as these asphalt surfaces they got now.
I guess not.
Oh, boy.
But even so then, I don't know whether it was either 24 or 25 that I had the record assist, you know, which stood until Ozzie Smith broke it in San Diego last year in a few more games.
That's right.
So there has to be an asterisk or something like that.
Sure thing.
I'm glad they didn't keep track of the errors. I know I'd still hold that record.
How about, I think he was pretty much through when you got there, Carson Bigby.
Yes, he was, but he was a good friend of mine. Carson and Max Carey were buddies,
yes,
you know.
I know that.
And Carson lived up in Oregon.
Uh-huh.
And, he had a Marmon touring car, and I know we were going out maybe to some golf club in Pittsburgh, and we're driving along, and here comes a tire just by itself down this hill. And Carson didn't know where in the world to go, you know. He couldn't tell where that tire was going, but he finally pulled off when he got even with it, and it didn't hit us. But it hit somebody else and just wrecked them.
Gee whiz.
Well, it was going pretty fast.
Sure.
Big old tire, that's quite a bit of weight.
That's right.
But anyway, Carson liked to play billiards, and I did too, three cushion billiards.
Mm-hmm.
And wherever we could, we'd have a game, you know.
Yeah.
And I liked Carson. In fact, I don't know any of them I didn't like, you know.
That's the way. Trainer?
I and I roomed together. And
you reckon he was as good a third baseman as Brooks Robinson?
Oh, to me, he was better.
I've heard that.
I think he was better than anybody.
I've heard that.
There wasn't anything he couldn't do. He couldn't hold the ball until the first baseman got to first.
He had to throw it.
If he held it, he'd throw it away.
I'll be darned.
And he had his glove was felt lined, you know.
Yeah. But they were a little tiny old gloves in those days.
Well, they weren't as big as they are now.
No.
They weren't real small.
No, I know.
But he's about the only one that had a felt lined glove.
Mm-hmm.
And I never saw him. Well, I never saw him drop one, a throwing ball or a pop fly or something like that. And he was a good hitter. He's a good base runner.
Oh, yes.
And he had some power.
Great hitter. Let me ask you a little about some of the pitchers. Ray Kramer.
He was a wonder.
He must have been.
He was a wonderful pitcher.
Yeah.
And
he pulled out.
Surprising, he didn't come up earlier than he did.
You know?
He was fairly old when he came up. But
he produced when he got there.
We used to have meetings before the games, and the pitchers would say how they were going to pitch to hitters.
Mm-hmm.
And you could bank on Ray pitching right where he said he would.
Mm-hmm.
Easy to play behind.
He helped pull out that 25 series in
last
two games.
He sure did.
Yeah. And Lee Meadows.
Same way. He had more stuff, probably.
Yeah.
And, great to work behind. You know, they didn't have an Hall of Stew around.
Yeah. Do I remember that he was the first one to wear glasses? First pitcher to wear glasses?
I believe he was.
Yeah, that's why they
called him. Wasn't he with St. Louis then?
He might have been, yeah. That's why they called him Specs, I guess.
Of course, Carmen Hill wore glasses too, but I believe Lee Meadows was the first one. But he was a great fella. He lived in Leesburg, Florida, and Emil Eady.
I was going to ask you about Emil. Yeah.
He and I used to go down and spend the winter down there with Lee. We'd get us a house with a cook, and we'd fish and hunt all the year.
Emil had one pretty good year anyway, mighty good year.
Yeah, his first game he was put in to relieve somebody against Alexander.
Uh-huh.
And the game went extra innings, and I believe Emil got the hit that beat Alexander finally.
Uh-huh.
That's when he first got his best notices,
yes,
you know.
And old Babe Adams was in his last years when he got there too.
Yeah, Babe was, he didn't have the stuff, of course,
not
that
then,
he had, but He knew where to pitch and how to pitch, of course. Mm-hmm. In 1909, he won 3 ball games.
That's right.
Wasn't that against Detroit?
Yeah. 1909. He was just, I think that was just his second or third year up.
Was it?
Yeah. What about Vic Aldridge?
Well, Vic, you stood on one foot and then the next foot. He was 3-2 on everybody.
Yeah.
And, of course, we almost thought he was throwing the game at when they scored 4 runs on him that first inning, you know?
Yeah.
And, of course, he wasn't. I shouldn't have even said that. But, well, he just wasn't the same Vic Aldridge, you know.
Well, that can happen. Like, in the 45 series, Hank Baroe goes in having won 2 and lost 1 and got bombed in the first inning of the last game.
Well, that's right. Vic just hated to throw, let a hitter hit a strike.
he just wanted to make him reach for a bad pitch.
And Vic, later, I believe he lived in Indiana someplace and was a senator or something.
Might have been. State senator.
In public office.
I'm sure he's dead, too, or I would have had him on my list.
Yeah.
How about Johnny Morrison?
Well, Johnny was he had one of the best curves anybody ever had.
I remember that.
Yeah. He and the Detroit pitcher, what's his name?
One who pitched so well in the 33 and 4
series. Oh, well.
I got it right.
He lived up around Portland, I believe. Maybe he pitched Portland.
Well, we got it here. You mean...
I should know.
Bridges.
Tommy Bridges. Yeah, that's right. Well, he and Johnny Morrison are supposed to have the best curve.
Yeah. Anything special about that 25 series that you stands out in your memory?
No, not really. I know I hit a home run. I hit a home run off of Kovaleski.
Yeah.
And it had something to do with helping us win, I believe.
Sure.
But anyway, I get requests for autographs now. Or maybe 10 or 15 a month, you know. And a lot of them ask me my biggest thrill. And I tell them it was standing at attention before the first game of the World Series in Pittsburgh, Aaron. Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra was down in center field. Some huge Italian lady was singing, sang a national anthem.
Mm-hmm.
And like both teams stood lined up on first, third base line.
Right.
I know that. I still think that was my biggest thrill because cold chills are running down me.
They should.
It was just wonderful to be in America and
be in that spot at that
be
moment.
Be in that spot, yeah.
Yep. How was Barney Dreyfus to work for?
Great.
Yeah.
He was a wonderful man. Now, he and Herman, who had Cincinnati at that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Gary Herman.
Was that it?
Yeah.
I couldn't remember that. But
two R's and two N's. Her, H-E-R-R-M-A-N-N.
Yes.
Yeah.
And those two were, everybody said you didn't have to have a contract with them. Their word was bond. And that was right, too.
I couldn't
I had to argue with Barney. But I'd been up to his apartment. He lived in the Shenley Apartments.
Yes, right nearby.
And his wife wasn't Jewish, but she was a wonderful woman.
Mm-hmm.
And Barney was a wonderful man, too. Of course, he had the club when it was in Louisville. But anyway, this one year we had to play an exhibition game up in Toronto. It was actually after the season was over. And Donnie Bush didn't go up there to manage it. Jewel Ends was the coach, and he managed the club. And we got up to Toronto in the morning, and we went to one of those railroad hotels, beautiful hotels. and started drinking some beer, ale. Mm-hmm. And we got out to the ballpark, and thought we could sweat it out, you know. Well, little Lloyd Wehner was out in center field during batting practice. I noticed a few balls almost hit him. So I went out there and I said, get on in a sideline or someplace. And mm-hmm. You're going to get hurt out here. The first one hit out to me came closer to hitting me than it did Lloyd, so I went to play. Mm-hmm. I knew I was going to get fined for not playing. Poor Pye, he had the balls that hit him all over. Paul Wehner out in right field, the scoreboard was maybe that far in from the wall, and Paul would hide behind there, the ball would hit out his way, and he'd go out and catch it. We won the game, close, tight game, but I can't think who played short instead of me, but he looked something like me. I got back to Pittsburgh, and $500 was taken out of my last check, which I didn't kick about it. I knew if I didn't play, I'd be fine. And well, I was down, Emil Eady and I both were down at Lee Meadows deer hunting this particular time.
In Florida.
We'd hunt deer, ride horses after dogs with shotgun, buckshot. You know. Mm-hmm. And I got word that Barney wanted me to come back and talk contract. I still live in Archie, Missouri. Mm-hmm. So anyway, during the 2 weeks out in the woods there, the palmettos or whatever they were, I let my beard grow. Well, I shaved it off, but I left my mustache when I went back home, you know, and my mother and sister saw me, and oh, they got on me terrible about my mustache. Anyway, in a couple of days, I got the train back to Pittsburgh, and before I did, I shaved my mustache, and Mom and Sis didn't even miss it.
Mm-hmm.
And that, of course, made me mad. But anyway, I get back to Pittsburgh and talk to Barney, and we come within $500 of agreeing, you know, and I got up to leave. Barney said, well, where are you going? I said, I'm going home. We're not getting to get together, and we won't. Well, I said, all right, I'll give you that five. He said, I knew you'd get that 500 back some way or other.
And you did.
And I did, yeah.
How about Burley Grimes as a pitcher?
Oh, he was a... He loved to win, of course.
Didn't he, though? Yeah.
I, like everybody would say, he knocked down his grandmother, but... at a ball game, I think he would have.
Yeah, I'm sure some of them would.
You know, I got hit in St. Louis one time by Vic Keene.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the one pitcher on the club that didn't knock you down. He was religious or something. And I don't know whether I just didn't see it or whether I just froze.
Yeah.
But it hit here on this big cheekbone and cracked like a rifle, and I was unconscious 30-some hours, and I was out about 6 weeks, and when I get back in, who's pitching but Burley Grimes? And the first pitch just knocks me down. I think I could feel it graze my ears. I went down, but while I was still in the dirt, I thought, well, if I can get out of the way of that, I can get out of the way of any of them, and I got up and was all right again. If he hadn't done that, I'd have still been scared, you know.
I doubt that's why he threw it at you, though.
Oh, I don't think so either, but we really were good friends off the field.
Yeah.
But he was tough to hit against. Not good, real good stuff, you know, but he could break a spitter two or three different ways.
That's right.
And he went to his mouth on every pitch.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes it wasn't a spitter, but...
You never knew.
Sometimes the ball would be hit to you. Now, we had Jack Quinn at Brooklyn, who was a spitballer. And he put more spit on it than Burley did. You get a hold of that. I've thrown a lot of spitballs, spitters to first base. But they both wanted to win. I never knew any pitcher didn't want to win.
That's right, but some a lot more than others.
Yes, it seems like.
Like Early Wynn and Burley.
Yeah.
Well, there are many stories about pitchers that'll lose a close one and go in and really wreck a locker room.
Oh. Yes, I don't know. Some pitchers you hit better than others, but I don't ever remember having a cousin.
Mm-hmm.
Willie Sherdell said he was my cousin, the little left-hander
with
the cards.
Yeah.
But they all were tough as far as I was concerned.
Of course, they would, if you just got a few hits off of some pitcher, he would think he was your cousin, but you would want a few more before you'd look upon him as a soft touch, huh?
Yes, I know. I like Alexander's the best pitcher I ever faced.
Yes.
As far as pitching is
concerned.
Yeah. He didn't have the most stuff. Like Walter Johnson or Dazzy Vance or Lefty Grove. But Irwer would, he could set a needle with every pitch he had.
That's what I hear.
And he had lots of pitches. He didn't just slow up for a change on his fastball. I mean, it wouldn't be a change, but he'd slow a little bit on his fastball sometime, another time add a little extra in.
Just enough to
throw
you off.
I know one time I didn't even hit it good. Hit it someplace, and he says, well, you...
he would mix them up so much.
Oh, goodness, yes.
They say that if he hadn't had the fondness for drink, especially after the war, he might have broken a lot of other records that he didn't.
Well, you hear that.
Yeah.
My goodness, you hear it about Babe Ruth, too.
Oh, yes.
But, you know, he'd have a fit on the bench once in a while. And that's what they were, fits. We used to think it was because he was drinking, you know, but he was an epileptic. And we didn't know that.
Yeah.
And like you hear about him having a drink before he struck out Lazzeri in that series.
Yeah, he was supposed to have been out carousing the night before after winning the sixth game.
Yes, you hear that anyway. And, well, maybe he was, but anyway.
It sure didn't bother him if he did.
And on the mound, no. Now he had, well, he had, Lee Metis got the throwing match one day. You know, somebody gets knocked down, well, the other side retaliates.
Yeah.
And Alec told Lee, he said, you might hurt him more when you hit him, but I'll hit more of him. And that was about right, too. But it's like Pat Malone and Charlie Root with the Cubs.
Yeah.
Now, they used to knock you down. I mean, they could throw hard, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You were knocked down. I know when McCarthy was their manager, they knocked me down twice at one at bat.
Oh, boy.
His theory was, well, you knock him down once, he'll think it's over. So we'll just floor him the next time, too. But actually, I hit those fellows a little better because of that. The ball would be hit to you. Now, we had Jack Quinn at Brooklyn, who was a spitballer, and he put more spit on it than Burley did. You get a hold of that. I've thrown a lot of spitballs, spitters to first base. But they both wanted to win. I never knew any pitcher didn't want to win.
That's right, but some a lot more than others.
Yes, it seemed like
it. Early Wynn and Burley.
Yeah.
Well, there are many stories about pitchers that'll lose a close one and go in and really wreck a locker room.
Oh. Yes, I don't know. Some pitchers you hit better than others, but I don't ever remember having a cousin. Willie Sherdell said he was my cousin, the little left-hander with the cards.
Yeah.
But they all were tough as far as I was concerned.
Of course, they would, if you just got a few hits off of some pitcher, he would think he was your cousin, but yeah. you would want a few more before you'd look upon him as a soft touch. Huh?
Yes, I know. I like Alexander's the best pitcher I ever faced.
Yes.
As far as pitching is
yeah.
He didn't have the most stuff. Like Walter Johnson or Dazzy yeah. Vance or Lefty yeah. Grove. But Irwer would, he could thread the needle with every pitch he had.
That's what I hear.
And he had lots of pitches. He yeah. he didn't just yeah. throw up for a change on his fastball. Yeah. I mean, it wouldn't be a change, but he'd slow a little bit on mm-hmm. his fastball sometime. Another time, add a little extra mm-hmm. in.
Just enough
I
to throw you off.
I know one time I didn't even hit it good. Hit it someplace, and he says, well, you...
He would mix them up so much.
Oh, goodness, yes.
They say that if he hadn't had the fondness for drink, especially after the war, he might have broken a lot of other records that he didn't.
Well, you hear that.
Yeah.
My goodness, you hear it about Babe Ruth, too.
Oh, yes.
But, you know, he'd have a fit on the bench once in a while. And that's what they were, fits. We used to think it was because he was drinking, you know, but he was an epileptic.
Ah.
And we didn't know that.
Yeah.
And like you hear about him having a drink before he struck out Lazzari
mm-hmm.
in that series.
Yeah, he was supposed to have been out carousing yeah. the night before after winning the sixth game.
Yes, you hear that anyway. And well, maybe he was, but anyway...
It sure didn't bother him if he did.
And on the mound, no. Now, he had... Well, he and Lee Metis got the throwing match one day.
Mm.
You know...
Yeah.
Somebody gets knocked down, well, the other side
somebody else has got to
retaliate.
Yeah.
And Alec told Lee, he said, you might hurt him more when you hit him, but I'll hit more of him. And that was about right, too. But like Pat Malone and Charlie Root were the Cubs.
Yeah.
Now, they used to knock you down. I mean, they could throw hard, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You were knocked down. I know when McCarthy was their manager, they knocked me down twice at one at bat.
Oh, boy.
His theory was, well, you knock him down once, he'll think it's over. So we'll just floor him the next time, too. But actually, I hit those fellows a little better because of that. While I was ready to go down, I was still ready to pull the trigger, too.
Yeah, yeah. When you, did you...
Mouth on every pitch.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes it wasn't a spitter, but...
You never knew.
Sometimes the ball would be hit to you. Now, we had Jack Quinn at Brooklyn, who
mm-hmm.
was a spitballer. And he put more spit on it than Burley did. You get a hold of that. I've thrown a lot of spitballs,
sure.
spitters to first base. But they both... wanted to win. I, of course, never knew any pitcher didn't want to win.
That's right, but some a lot more than others.
Yes, it seems like
it. Early win and Burley.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there are many stories about pitchers that'll lose a close one and go in and really wreck a locker room.
Oh. Yes, I don't know how some pitchers you hit better than others, but I don't ever remember having a cousin.
Mm-hmm.
Willie Sherdell said he was my cousin, the little left-hander
with yeah,
the cards.
Yeah.
But they all were tough as far as I was concerned.
Of course, they would, if you just got a few hits off of some pitcher, he would think he was your cousin, but
yeah.
you would want a few more before you'd look upon him as a soft touch. Huh?
Yes, I know. Now, like Alexander's the best pitcher I ever faced.
Yes.
As far as pitching is
yeah.
He didn't have the most stuff. Like Walter Johnson or
yeah.
Dazzy Vance or Lefty
yeah.
Grove. But Irwer would, he could thread the needle with every pitch he had.
That's what I hear.
and he had lots of pitches. He didn't just throw up for a change on his fastball. I mean, it wouldn't be a change, but he'd slow a little bit on his fastball sometime, another time add a little extra in.
Just enough to throw
you off. I know one time I didn't even hit it good. Hit it someplace, and he says, well, you...
He would mix them up so much.
Oh, goodness, yes.
They say that if he hadn't had the fondness for drink, especially after the war, he might have broken a lot of other records that he didn't.
Well, you hear that. Yeah. My goodness, you hear it about Babe Ruth, too.
Oh, yes.
But, you know, he'd have a fit on the bench once in a while. And that's what they were, fits. We used to think it was because he was drinking, you know, but he was an epileptic. And we didn't know that.
Yeah.
And like you hear about him having a drink before he struck out Lazzari in that series.
Yeah, he was supposed to have been out carousing the night before after winning the sixth
game. Yes, you hear that anyway. And well, maybe he was, but anyway...
It sure didn't bother him if he did.
And on the mound, no. Now he had... Well, he and Lee Metis got the throwing match one day.
Mm.
You know,
yeah.
Somebody gets knocked down, well, the other side...
Somebody else has got to...
Retaliate. Yeah. And Alec told Lee, says, you might hurt him more when you hit him, but I'll hit more of him. And that was about right, too. But it's like Pat Malone and Charlie Root with the Cubs.
Yeah.
Now, they used to knock you down. I mean, they could throw hard, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You were knocked down. I know when McCarthy was their manager, they knocked me down twice at one at bat.
Oh, boy.
His theory was, well, you knock him down once, he'll think it's over. So we'll just floor him the next time, too. But actually, I hit those fellows a little better because of that. While I was ready to go down, I was still ready to pull the trigger, too.
Yeah. Now, when you, did you expect to get traded, or was it a surprise when you got traded to Brooklyn?
Well, it was kind of a surprise. It was after one of Donnie's and my argument. But anyway, he loved Perry, you know. The left-hander was with Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And Robbie wanted me, because I always hit pretty good against him. And he loved hitters, you know, like Babe Herman and Johnny Frederick, Drew Bressler, and those fellas. But anyway, I was a little surprised, but I had hurt my shoulder that winter, you know.
You didn't play much that first season.
Oh, and I told Robbie that.
Yeah.
He said, well, that'd make any difference. He'd rather have me than Perry anyway. And,
You mean the pitcher?
Yeah.
Sure it wasn't Jess Petty?
Jess Petty, yes.
Yeah.
Of course, that's who I mean. I don't know what made me say Perry.
That's all right.
Because I love to hit against him. Of course, I love to hit against any left-handers. But
well, Jess on his record was never as much of a pitcher as you were of a shortstop and hitter. He had some fairly good seasons, but here he's 13 and 18 and 15 and 15 and 17 and 17, like a 500 pitcher.
Yeah.
You got to have some of those, but you got to have some a lot better to
move
on.
Yes, you have.
Yeah. He was 11 and 10 the first year with Pittsburgh, so he didn't burn up the league.
No.
So how'd that arm injury happen?
Playing handball at the athletic club in Kansas City, and I went back after one against the back wall, and it was rather low, and I just let myself go into the concrete wall.
Yeah.
Like a tackle shoulder, you know.
You're lucky to come back after
that. Oh, yes. They had a doctor, I can't think of his name. used to pitch baseball too.
Uh-huh.
Travel with him. Just he's a, more of a chiropractor, you know.
Yeah.
But then that didn't help. And finally, well, they had me strapped this way for a month or two.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't work. And finally, Dr. Quickman and his son, Armitage, operated on me. Had bore holes in the clavicle and scapula and tied them together with a fascia, muscle covering.
Yeah.
They took out of my left leg. They'd always used kangaroo skin or silver wire before. And then, of course, I was in a cast holding my arm up like that for about 6 weeks.
Well, they must have done a good job,
well,
then, because your next year was your best one.
Yeah.
Like percentage-wise and RBIs and home runs and everything.
Yeah, because I could throw, I'd say just as hard, I'd go through the motion, but it took the ball longer to get there. Yes, I did have a good year after that.
321 average, 126 RBIs, 22 home runs.
Yeah, now I passed Babe Herman on one of them, or I'd have had another one.
Tell me about Babe.
Oh, Babe is a wonder. He's a lovable guy, and still is. I still hear from him.
I wrote him, but I haven't heard from him. I'd like to.
Well, I hope you do.
Yeah.
He and Ann still live in Glendale.
That's right. Yeah.
And I expect in the same house where I used to visit them. But Babe was a... He was uncanny now. He could hit with his eyes closed, I think.
He could,
but
he,
this
he
time,
fielded half the time with his eyes closed too, didn't he?
Well, they feel it that way, they say, but he was a pretty good fielder.
I bet he was.
And he could run with anybody,
uh-huh.
And he could throw with anybody. I don't know why he's not in the Hall of Fame.
Don't either.
Perhaps he will be.
Yeah.
Even before me, but they run out
of
fame.
They'll never do justice putting in two of the old-timers a year.
No.
They'll never catch up with them, with all the good ones.
No, and Babe is kind of vain, you know, too. He and Hoss Thurston and I used to run together quite
sloppy.
A bit. Sometimes we'd go places where we didn't want Babe to go. Oh, he'd cry like a baby, or almost, you know. Like Lopez, we brought up Al Lopez, too, who I think is the best catcher I ever saw.
Yeah.
And Hollis would call him a low Mexican, and Al would say, well, you know I'm a high Spaniard. Oh, Hollis would think up things to say, and we're all the best friends, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But Al, I noticed that now Al chose me on his team and in some clippings I have someplace.
Uh-huh.
Of course, I don't know what year it was, but I don't remember who else he had on it. But, and he's on the committee to
That's right.
to pick the Hall of Famer, I think, and so is Joe Cronin.
Uh-huh. Cronin played a little bit with you in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
When he was just breaking in.
Yeah.
But you traded him to...
We had Bartell then, too.
Yeah. Who'd you trade Cronin to, the Red Sox?
Oh, we traded him to... What, Washington, to
Might
Kansas
have been.
City.
Yeah, yeah.
I believe we traded him to Kansas City in the association.
Is that right?
Well, or then sold him there, and then he went to Chattanooga or someplace down there, and he went to Washington from there.
Yeah, all right.
I believe.
I can't trace him right here, but it doesn't matter. So what happened when you passed Babe on the base paths that time?
Oh, well, of course, I when I stepped off first base, I there was somebody on second.
Mm-hmm.
And I hit this ball to left center. Those days there was a low fence out in left left field. It ran clear along out to center field. And I wasn't sure the ball was going to go in, but I knew I hit it pretty good. Can't remember off who now. But I stepped on first base. I almost stepped on Babe's foot. But anyway, I went on around. We're fighting for the pennant then, too. Mm-hmm.
Which year was this?
I don't remember.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
And I got in the bench and I started cussing Robbie out, his pet, everything. And Babe come in and I was thinking up what all I was going to say to Babe, you know. He came in and he says, "Well, Cap, you always told me to watch that runner in front of you," which it had, you know, mm-hmm. too. And what could you say then? I couldn't say anything.
He had you stopped.
Yeah.
But who was the runner in front of him?
I don't remember that.
Yeah. I've read the incident. I should know.
Yeah.
I've forgotten it. What was Rube Bressler like?
Rube was a... he used to be a pitcher, you know.
Yes.
But he was a left fielder and a good one. Mm-hmm. And a good hitter.
Oh, yeah.
He'd choke up on his bat quite a bit, but he was a good hitter. But he was a kind of sarcastic and dry wit.
Yeah.
So he was a great guy. But I sure liked him. We were pretty good friends. Of course, we all were pretty good friends.
Yeah. Now, when you got there, when you got to Brooklyn first year and was injured, was Bancroft playing short? Dave Bancroft?
Well, I believe he was.
Let me check that.
He was there.
Yeah, he played short most of the time in 29.
That was after Ivy Olson.
Yeah, that's right. And then in 30 you took over.
Yeah. I know I'd had to hurry my plays, but I still had a good year, as you said there.
Oh, yeah. Boy, did you ever. Tell me about Dazzy Vance.
Well, Dazzy was more of a thrower than a pitcher. I thought you couldn't tell him that, though, because, well, he was big and strong, and he could throw hard.
He went through a lot of motion in his delivery.
Remember, he used to have a kind of a raggedy shirt.
That's right.
There till they made him quit that.
Yeah, not legal now.
And everybody talks about his fastball, but he had one of the best curves that anybody ever had, too. And he could throw hard. But there was no use. I know he got on me one day because I didn't get a ball that was hit out by me. And he said, "If Thurston had been pitching, you'd have caught that ball." And I said, "Yes, I probably would because I'd have been playing over there." Because he threw it where he said he was going to. You don't even know yourself where you're going to throw the ball. And I doubt if he did.
Yeah, I doubt that.
But he was tough to hit.
Yeah.
He was especially tough in that Cub Park.
Yeah.
He always could strike out a lot of Cubs.
Seems like the Cubs are known for that to me.
Yeah.
You saw in his last years or so there, Dolph Luecke.
Oh, yeah. It didn't have to be his last years. He was a great pitcher. He was at Cincinnati.
Yeah, he was 14-8 in this year of 30.
Was he?
Yeah.
And then he was with the Giants.
Yeah, his best years in Cincinnati.
Well, they had a great pitching staff, and Luecke was the toughest, I thought.
Yeah.
They had Big Apple Jeppa.
Rixey.
Now, he was a fraternity brother of mine, too. I can remember hitting against him. The bases were full in Cincinnati, and he threw me six straight change of paces with the count 3-2.
You're kidding.
And I fouled them
all over the plate.
Fouled them all off until the last one I hit it, would have hit up against the center field scoreboard.
Yeah.
But Ed Roush leaped up and caught
it. Got there. Son of a gun.
But six straight change of paces.
Yeah, Epa won 21 back in 25, but Dolph had a year where he won 26 or 27 for Cincinnati 1 year.
Well, they had Pete Donahoe, too.
Yeah, Pete Donahoe. I would like to get a hold of him, too.
Well, he's down in Texas.
He's in Texas, yeah. Dawes won 27 in the year 23. He was 27 and 8.
That was the year before I came up.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they had Rixey won 20 that year and Pete Donahoe 21.
Is that right?
Still, they only finished second.
Yeah, they were always tough for us.
Yeah. All right, we'll move on here to something else. How about Del Bissonette?
Ah, great. He was the best first baseman I ever
was. Was he really?
On bad throws.
That's important.
Yeah, it was for me. Because he had enough of them. Well, like Stuckey McGinnis used to tell you to throw them bad.
Mm-hmm.
He'd make me look good. Well, those pickups are easy to catch for a first baseman or anybody else. But if there were half hops, very few get those. But Bissonette could get them more than not.
Yeah, I remember going back to Texas after one of my first years in college at Notre Dame, and I started playing on the town team. They had a bunch of new players and a shortstop who was quite a shortstop named Yoder. And the first day of practice, we go out there, and every ball they hit to him, he threw in the dirt to me at first base. And I came up with 9 out of 10 of them at least. But I was thinking to myself, this guy can't throw the ball right 1 time out of 10.
Yeah.
After the game, he says, well, after the practice, he comes over, well, I was just giving you the test. See if you could come up with those bad throws when I do make one.
Yeah.
And he was right. He almost never made a bad one. But
is that right? Well,
he gave me the tryout.
Mine weren't intentional.
And Johnny Frederick.
Well, Johnny, I guess he lives up in Oregon someplace, too. Johnny was kind of a, more of a loner, I'd say, but did he hit all those doubles pinch hitting, or was it regular?
I think it was regular.
Yeah, well, anyway.
He had the record for a while.
He was a good-looking hitter and a pretty good center fielder. Not the best I ever saw, but he was pretty good.
Who would be the best you ever saw, center fielder?
Well, the best I ever played with was Lloyd Wehner.
How did I pass them by? I had them on here somewhere. Let's talk about Lloyd and Paul for a second.
Well,
I saw Paul in his first season with you people.
Did you? I helped him sign his first contract. I used to hunt with Fred Clark, who owned part of the club.
Oh, Fred Clark, yeah.
Yes. In fact, I went with his younger daughter, Muriel. But I'd go to Kansas and hunt his quail season with him, and then he'd come to Missouri and hunt my season with me. And we both had good dogs. But I was down at Fred's ranch, Little Pirate Ranch, out of Winfield, Kansas, a few miles out. Had about 10 oil wells in his front yard.